Yeah, good. That's what I'm here for. We'll accept any and all drinks or trinkets.
Are you going to win the league?
Absolutely. We can lose six games. We've only Man City have beaten us in 2 years, but we can lose six games.
I saw a stat 2 weeks ago that you needed 1 point then to qualify for Europe, and I think 4 more wins to qualify for the Champions League. You can have Champions League wrapped up by the end of February.
Yeah, so I know, it's absolutely insane. And they're not going to stop winning. They can't be bothered.
Yesterday, they didn't really leave second gear.
Yeah.
There was a time in the second half, beginning of the second half, where they turned it on a bit, and then they didn't even need to leave second
gear. It was just jabs.
Yeah.
It was just containment.
Same thing that happened against us, because I thought, okay, when we played them, we second half we kind of put it on them a bit. And I left the game thinking, encouraged, thinking, oh yeah, you know what? We really gave Liverpool a game. We can go on. We can get back in the title race. But what it is they just do enough. They do enough every week. I think if United equalise, they'd have scored again.
I agree. There's been a lot of games this year I've heard people saying Liverpool have not been great. That team should have beaten them. The only game I think Liverpool should have genuinely lost was the Watford game. I thought Watford should have been 3 up at half time.
Yeah, Watford. We were fortunate against Watford, and we were fortunate against Palace.
All the other games, I'm thinking, people are saying, oh,
they
equalise. I just think, as you said, if Liverpool had to score another 2 goals, they've got that in them.
Do
you know what I mean? So I don't think it's.
And that's even the Palace one. The Palace one, like, I thought, okay, this is it now. The title race is open. And they just went up the other end and scored that 2 minutes. I was like, what's this?
That was crazy. But then Zaha does miss in like the 93rd minute, something he probably should do better with. And that's why we're lucky, if you know what I mean. Like, he misses that 193.
Yeah, but that's exactly the luck that you get when you're winning things.
Yeah, and when people are scared of you. I feel you've got to hit the top corner with every shot.
Yeah.
If not, the keeper will save it.
And that's what people were complaining, they always get the VAR decisions.
You earn
the referee respect. Seriously.
I'll tell you what, we didn't get it yesterday.
You earn it.
Indeed. I think that's a great sign of a good team. Like, when you're not playing that well and you're still managing to get past that line, like
short term. Who's got headphones? Are there any headphones on that side?
No.
You haven't got any.
I've got some.
You got some?
Did it.
Oh, right. It's the Football Fans Podcast with myself, Jordan Jarrett. Brian, thanks for joining us once again. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. Leave us a comment. Share all that jazz. You know what to do by now. I'm joined this week on the pods by, let's start with Akin, our United fan. Akin, it's been a while. How are you doing, sir?
I'm well, thank you. How are you, Jordan?
I'm good, mate. Cheers for coming back. We're going to get into your therapy later on.
Interesting that you invited me on this week.
Well, it is. It's a total coincidence. We've also got Chelsea fan here, G.
Yeah, I thought it would be a bad week, but everyone else messed up around us. So it's 1 week closer to the Champions League places.
we might get to Chelsea later on. Don't worry about that. We've got here from the Anfield Wrap once again, gloating Liverpool supporter and rightfully so, Neil. How are you doing, sir?
I'm all right. I don't think I'm gloating.
No, you are gloating.
I'm just quite comfortable with the general situation. You know, I'm just very relaxed.
As you should be. Right, we're going to try and get through so much on this pod regarding yesterday's game, but more importantly, the two clubs. And we'll have a discussion at the end of it, the end of the pod around managers and when it's right to sack and when it's right to stick as well. But I want to be quite forensic on yesterday's game and the two teams involved. So many things to get through. So if I've got a list of things I want to discuss with all three of you. So if you could all three keep your answers relatively tight, we can keep this moving. Let me start with you first of all, Neil. The league's won, right? Just let's get that out of the way.
Yeah, we announced it last night. It's 6:20.
Okay. So you can say here, live on the Football Fans Podcast, you'll win the Premier League.
Liverpool
this
will win the Premier League this season.
Okay, because we know lots of Liverpool fans.
Yeah, I understand why, but I think, you know, there's a point at which you just sound ridiculous in the face of the facts. So you're 16 points clear with a game in hand, and you've taken 91 from the last 93. You can't. There's a point at which you just look like an idiot. I think it was interesting. The ground sort of spontaneously announced it yesterday. You could hear it coming through the television. that for the first time. It was the first time we'd sang "We're Gonna Win the League" yesterday, and it was sang as like it was like a statement of fact. It wasn't a "this is our hope and this is our belief." It was a statement of fact that this. I think that generally now Liverpool supporters do think it's done. I always had Wolves away in mind on Thursday, but City dropping points against Palace and then us beating United, I think, just as I say, you just look at, you just look like an idiot. If we win our next two games, we're 19 points clear. I mean, you know, you it's like say it's like basically arguing about whether or not we're going to go down. Oh, you never know, it's still in the balance. Someone could come with it. You know, it just sounds ridiculous. So at some sort of point, you've got to say, yeah, it's Liverpool. Sure, or, you know, Liverpool are going to win the league from this point.
What I want to know from you, Neil, is the fact that you've won the league so early as a Liverpool fan. I mean, you don't care when you win the league; you just want to win the league. But is the fact that they're not going to have that dramatic moment, ergo Arsenal at Anfield 89, City against QPR, you're not going to have that goal, that game where it's a dramatic win. It's going to be a little bit like a damp squid, is the wrong phrase, but you're going to kind of limp to the end of the season as champions.
It's going to be a bit of a procession, but you know, you want drama. There's late winners against Crystal Palace. I'll never... You know, Mane's 93rd minute header against Aston Villa felt at the time huge, and I think it was huge. I think you can't argue with that. You know, that well, you get one back on 87 and then you get a winner on 93. Even yesterday, you know, I mean, you want to tell that ground was the ground of sheer drama when Salah goes through on goal and slots. His reaction, the reaction of the crowd, Jordan Henderson hits the deck in the centre circle. No one really picks up on that, but just hits the deck because, he knew. everything he's put in and knows where it is and what it means. So, you know, you've had the drama, obviously, as I say, the win against City, all the way through, it's felt, you know, like it's felt momentous and it's felt like it's coming. And then, you know, even little things like I'll possibly never celebrate any goal not scored by Liverpool as much as the goal that made it 2-2 for Wolves against City. It wasn't even the idea of the 3-2, just the 2-2, just the dropping of any points. That was dramatic. And that was, you know, they're banging on the door, banging on the door, banging on the door. And you're watching it over Christmas, like, you know, absolutely invested. And that's what you're in it for. And then things like going to Leicester and absolutely marmalising them 4-0 was when they were in second place at the time. We've just come back from the Club World Cup. We're meant to be vulnerable, and we decimated them over the course of 90 minutes. And that felt, you know, that it felt like the performance of league winners. So you've had those moments. You have had them.
Okay. G, in the game itself, Van Dijk had a goal disallowed. Sorry, Firmino had a goal disallowed for a foul from Van Dijk on the keeper. Was it a foul?
Yeah, I think that was a foul. I mean, I think keepers sometimes were a little too protected, because I see them come out with their elbows and their knees sometimes and nothing is given the other way. But in terms of the normal rules, I would expect that foul to be given. De Gea's response though was crazy, right? Like, he just ran over to the ref like, no way, you got to check it. He like deservedly got a yellow card. I couldn't believe he was so aggressive with it. Like, VAR was there. Like, what we need to do is just say, look, VAR, and he'll check it. You know what I mean? They check everything anyway, so I don't know why he got so animated. But yeah, it was. I think it should have been disallowed, but I don't think it, you know, doesn't have a big bearing on the game, the title or anything. They could have scored again in the next minute if they wanted to.
It wouldn't have mattered. Akin, was it a foul?
I think it was. No, sorry. I think it wasn't a foul.
I didn't think it was a foul.
I think the goal should have been given. Yeah. What? Because why was it a foul? Because he made contact with his arm?
His arms were down. His arms weren't, like, he didn't jump.
To me, he jumped. Van Dijk jumped for the ball. De Gea jumped for the ball, but didn't get his body in the right position and kind of leaned over, and as a result, Van Dijk's head made contact with De Gea's arm. I don't think the contact was, you know, major contact. It was minimal.
You don't think the contact impeded him though, made him drop the ball?
I think his position to try and jump for it, the way he jumped for it, was the bigger issue, and I think that's what made it look like anything. But I don't think it was a foul.
I think an aggressive keeper takes that and player. It just takes everything. I'm grabbing this ball.
The reaction was the most...
I think he was embarrassed.
Probably, actually.
I think he was embarrassed.
But at least I saw something from him, because my feeling... I think he's such a kitty cat, David De Gea. I'm not impressed.
I like how you censored the word you wanted to really...
Yeah.
I do appreciate that.
But I think he's such a kitty cat. And that kind of epitomised it. Beyond that as well, Lindelof still had the chance to clear it or do something, and he just did nonsense as well. So, Anyway.
We'll get to United later on, and I want to talk about two players in particular, Martial and Henderson, later on. But on Virgil van Dijk, Akin, what I find interesting about van Dijk is that some players in the league, they may be young and they may be linked to bigger clubs. Everyone thinks, oh, he's a good player. So maybe Maddison, for example, everyone's looking at him thinking, yeah, he's a decent player. We wouldn't mind him. But they don't necessarily go on to fulfil what you think that they might have shown when they were, you know, years gone by. It was very clear to me, even at Celtic and definitely at Southampton, that Virgil van Dijk was going to be a top, top centre-back. Why do you think no one, even at Celtic, went for him earlier? Why do you think only Liverpool had that kind of almost free run-up to get what we're seeing now as the best centre-back in the world?
Well, whilst he was at Celtic...
That was because of the league, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's Celtic, the Scottish league.
You can stand out easily in that league.
Yeah, the Scottish league isn't in a good place at the moment. I can't remember who else was in for him when he was at Southampton. Was it only Liverpool?
City came in later.
And I think it was the price tag that Southampton wanted. Liverpool were the only ones that were willing to go so high. It was a world record for a centre back at the time.
Yeah.
But I don't remember. I don't remember United, Arsenal, Inter. I don't remember other top teams. I'm just making the point that there's clearly
he left out certain teams. That's what I'm saying.
All right, my team as well. I'm not even shooting.
Arsenal wouldn't go for that type.
The point I'm making is it was clearly obvious this guy was a top centre back and had levels to go.
Yeah, but was it clearly obvious?
I think it was.
I think he had a lot. Remember that whole Sol Bamba thing? He had a lot of doubters before he got to Liverpool.
I think there was only, you know what? I think.
People knew he was a good ball playing centre back. I don't think people knew about how good he was defensively. I remember, and Chelsea were actually rumoured to go in for him as well. Conte wanted him quite badly, but you know, we were just putting him into play at the moment.
I think it was hipster fans that still don't rate him that much and still and had doubts at the time.
Got some names.
Certain people in the group. Yeah,
know some names there at all. No.
Anyway. I must admit, I didn't think he was a bad defender, but I thought his ball playing was far superior to his defending. And I didn't realise how good he was a defender. Or maybe he's got better over time. I don't know. Maybe you could say that.
I've always liked him, to be fair. I liked him at Celtic. At Southampton, I liked him, but I stopped paying attention, I guess. I don't like what he's done at Liverpool. for people to still be questioning what he's doing, I find, and then point to one or two errors that he makes that every defender
and are they even errors? People are really clutching to
every defender is going to get done during the season. Every defender.
I think so, he has improved. I think that's an important thing. I think almost every player who's come to Liverpool the last few years has got better, and the ones who were there existing have got better. I think he has improved. And I think that's testament to him. You know, he's not rested on his laurels from the minute he's got there. I think he's come on. Couple of things. I think that now with a lot of big transfers, it's done behind the scenes. So I think Van Dijk, probably one of the reasons why it becomes a two-window thing for Liverpool, but I think Van Dijk's made it pretty clear he wants to go to Liverpool above everywhere else. So it's done in the summer, and I think at that point then it becomes, when you're sort of Guardiola, you're a bit like, well, if he doesn't want to come to me anyway, I'm not going to go and put the yards in to convince him. And so we'll have him if we can get him, but we're not going to put the yards in. Chelsea, you know, we're not going to go to this fellow with a begging bowl. We get to, and I think it became a little bit of one of them, really, where, you know, Liverpool got into trouble around it in the summer, but the player was prepared to wait it out for the first part of the season at Southampton and then come to Liverpool. And I think that, you know, so therefore it almost makes me think, well, was it done even before the summer? You know, as all the feelers being out, you know, like Liverpool had, it looks like now from afar, Liverpool had a clear run on Naby Keita. And then you find a Barcelona had a late little dabble, but Naby Keita, it wasn't as though, and I think it's because Liverpool have got it boxed for about a year before. And I think with a lot of these big transfers now, it's all the legwork's being done. You know, even 18 months before, you know, before we even get a proper link, at times someone's made it pretty clear, if the situation's right, I'll be going to you, and everyone's just sort of playing it out and waiting for it. So I think that was it.
You're probably talking how it's done at a big club that's structured properly.
Yeah.
So basically,
you're not going to... You're right.
You know, it's not done like that everywhere.
No.
I agree that at clubs, the top clubs that are functioning properly, definitely, they're done long before we hear much. And you're probably right. That's probably why you don't hear much competing clubs coming in, because what's the point?
Yeah, it's all been sorted out. And there's no secrets in football.
G, it kicked off last night on Sky. between Carragher and Roy Keane.
Great TV.
It was great TV. Both making some valid points. Some...
Was it great TV?
Oh, it was pretty TV.
It was great TV. I don't think they both made good points, but I think it was great TV.
One of them made good points.
No, I think they both made good points.
No. I think Keane was stretching, especially Keane when he brought in Lampard. What are you bringing Lampard for? He's the top of the room.
That bit was a bit weird. Yeah. I don't know why he brought Lampard in. He did a little bit, yeah. But his overall point... let me ask you, as a United fan, his overall point that he seems to really be batting hard for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and
then complains when that the English are batting hard for Lampard because he's English.
Yeah,
because I think when he's batting hard for Solskjaer because he's his former teammate.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyways, carry on.
No. But my point being, do you find it weird that Keane has been so, someone that's known for being very critical, has been so openly positive and backing?
Because Solskjaer's his guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
So if you're in his circle, then he will back you. That's pretty, as he was as a player. If you're in his team, he would kill for you.
Right,
kind of
right
thing.
In
yeah.
There, yeah.
But so he was so disingenuous last night. I mean,
you can
look at some of the things that he said in previous years, where he said, how can you be aiming for top four? The standards have dropped, etc.
And he was cool on that yesterday.
Now,
well,
yesterday, he's saying top four and you can still win the FA Cup. That's a good season. Give him more time. He even went as far as saying he deserves it. He's earned it.
Yeah.
The presenter questioned
him. He checked
him
on it. Yeah.
He said, how's he, what's he done to earn it? He was flummoxed.
He was a little bit.
Yeah.
He was a little bit.
And then he started getting angry in his best Roy Keane way.
Yeah,
I think he really embarrassed himself.
I think he did as well.
The only good point he made was that Martial should have finished that chance. Having said that, he didn't add fair context to it, given that Martial is a stone cold finisher and the way he hit that chance was out of character. He went at Martial as a whole.
We'll get to Martial.
All right.
Don't worry. We've got a section on Martial. Don't worry about that.
All right. But in any case, that was the only... about that chance specifically, you have to finish that. At the very least, you have to hit the target.
Well, he didn't... Yeah, that's what... He didn't say he has to score.
No, he
said,
did.
He said
did.
Hit the target.
No. He said a top player scores that chance.
A Man United striker.
Yeah. Okay. And then he went in.
Okay. G, what did you make of Carragher's comments regarding the time that a lot of the ex-United legends are saying Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should be given? His point is that, you know, the guys you've had in the past, you were right to sack them because they weren't good enough. But the United boys seem to be like, nah, the problem is that there's no time being put in.
It was almost calling Keane out on his hypocrisy without saying it directly.
Yeah.
Because, I think he actually did say it directly because he said, you slaughtered Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, he did.
He
put it on him.
Carragher didn't stand down.
Yeah, he didn't stand down. It was, and he was totally right. It is just straight hypocrisy. I can't even, there isn't really much to add. Like, Carragher said it all yesterday.
Do you think Carragher asserted why he's the best football pundit on television yesterday?
Oh, man, I don't know. He spits in people's faces. I don't know if I can agree with that.
Leave my boy JLO.
He's definitely coming along.
In a statement on his punditry.
in a way that not only did other pundits, I think, would have wilted being hotted up by Keane.
Yeah.
And he
he's
was
probably
right.
one.
And
he wasn't right. On the studio.
I love it.
And that's the worst. Compare it to like when Neville was trying to be a little bit defensive of Man United. I can't remember who it was against.
He had brown pants.
And it was like, oh yeah, you know, they were just a little tired. He was like, come on, Gary.
He stuck it on him.
You know what I mean?
He stuck it on him.
And then on that day, Keane wasn't litting up at all. He was like, no, it was not good enough.
Yeah, he was on one.
You know what I mean? He was on one.
He was.
But today, it's like, he actually said it was a good performance from United yesterday.
He did.
That wasn't a good performance. That was a performance of a team that know they had you in the pocket and slacked off for a little while. And then you had a one or two chances. That wasn't a good performance.
No. We didn't have one or two chances.
We did. Pereira should score in the first half. Martial should, at the bare minimum, hit the target.
All right.
There's two good chances.
I'll take that.
So you say one chance.
The thing is, one and a half. You said it as if, like, we were in the game.
No, you weren't in the game.
Like, I don't even like what it implies. I was so far off.
I think the punditry thing of, he should definitely score there. Mo Salah's absolutely incredible. And he missed from 6 yards what was all but an open goal.
Mane missed a good chance.
Mane missed a couple of really good chances, got through on goal.
I don't think he has to score that.
No, but the problem with he has to score, the problem with he has to score is, so Lo Celso's chance the other week, Lo Celso's chance where he misses, which is much more of a had to score than certainly 100%. Anything for Martial.
Yeah.
Just on that, when you do the XG on it, and I know it bores people, but it's like 0.46, i.e., every other one of them doesn't go in. in that area. And that's just absolutely fine. That's football. And I think that when the pundits do that, he has to score their thing. I think partially they're sort of like emotionally going back to when they were players and how they would have felt both for themselves and for a teammate, like I've let the side down or he's let the side down. But I think in general what it actually does is it's just an insult. Mo Salah's chance is much more he had to score. Mo Salah in the 93rd minute holds off Dan James, runs the length of the pitch and slots it. It's a harder chance, but also a top player there would score. So a top player would score the Mo Salah one that he misses. Mo Salah's a top player. I'm not arguing about that. Mm. So he shows later on why he's a top player. If Martial was getting two or three chances in a game and was continually missing them, then absolutely fine.
That's his but one chance.
And he knows that. So that's in Martial's head.
That's the part, that's what I'm talking about, the context. He added no context to it.
Yeah.
The fact that it was his only chance, so he's cold kind of thing.
He knows.
He knows that we don't create well. That chance that he did get, he created himself. You've got to add that.
All right, so let's just do Martial.
And then
now,
also,
then,
Martial usually is a stone cold finisher.
It's unlike
he's
him.
A very so at least say that's not like him. At least Neville, who I don't like, and I think he has his agendas and is a celebrity now. At least he did say he usually finishes that kind of chance. He added some context. Roy Keane just went in.
What I find interesting about that chance, though, as well, is that Keane did mention. I think he mentioned other United strikers from the past.
He did.
I'm not sure Van Nistelrooy scores that. I'm not sure Rooney scores that. That's not an easy chance, even for a top forward.
It is. It's a good
chance.
I think it's a great chance.
But Martial
finishes that chance. That's the point we're making.
I think if he scores that, you're like, whoa.
No.
I think
you're that good goal.
You're a good goal. But I think that, you know, there's good chances all the way through the game. There's only two goals in the game. There's good chances all the way through the game. Both sides have created good chances. Liverpool well more than United, but there's good chances all the way through the game, but there's only two goals in the game. Guess what? That's most football matches. Mm. It's certainly a lot of football matches where you can come away from a game and feel like, you know, genuinely, I came away from that. Some of us, we were talking afterwards and we were like, 4-0 wouldn't have flattered us. No, between the one given away from the goalkeeper, so the VAR one, which you don't feel entirely was. The chances Liverpool had to create chances around the penalty area on two or three occasions. The ones they got Mane through. Henderson hits the post, great save.
Off days as well.
I think they've had a few off days this season, which is one of the reasons why, you know, Liverpool should have been out of sight against Tottenham, and it ends up going, there's the late Lo Celso chance, and then everyone says, oh. The fact of the matter is that there's chances in every game.
Yeah.
And if we start acting as though every single forward who misses a chance is absolutely terrible, then we basically end up saying that only Leo Messi's any good at football.
He misses chances.
And even he misses them every now and again.
That's how he was behaving yesterday when you went after him.
So on Martial, let's dissect Martial now, because we've been talking today and yesterday.
Sorry, can I quickly add?
Go on.
Pereira's chance.
The one where he slides in.
Yeah. That was not mentioned.
It wasn't mentioned.
And that's an open
It wasn't
goal.
Mentioned. Yeah. That is a must score. he has to score that one. So on Martial, they went in quite hard on Martial. Well, Roy Keane did anyway, Akin, on Sky yesterday. The implication from, he said it. He thinks that they should cut the losses and they should sell.
Yeah, he said he's not good enough.
He's not good enough for the club. My view is that I'm not quite as strident as Roy Keane on this, but I too think that he's had 5 years now and it's just not working. Now, I will caveat this by saying Martial is the only player that United have had in the last 5 or 6 years that, as an Arsenal fan, I've genuinely been jealous about you guys having. Mm-hmm. That first year at United, I remember saying, I'm jealous you've got this guy, because I think he's a brilliant player, a brilliant finisher.
Is it too far to say he could have been Henri light, maybe?
I think he could have been better than Henri.
Ooh.
I think he could have been better than Henri. I think he's a proper
he's
player.
He's probably used development window.
I think he could have been.
That's
a massive shout.
I've never seen shouts big in my life.
I think, because people don't realise, Henri wasn't a natural finisher.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
This guy, I think Martial's a natural finisher.
He is.
Do you know what I mean? So in terms of numbers, I don't think in the wrong team he could have. I think, but anyway, so I've got no agenda against Martial, but it's not working. So I agree with Roy Keane in the sense that I would let him go. You think that he should be given more time and there are other extenuating circumstances as to why he should be given more time and he should stay. Why?
Okay, let me answer this from a different kind of perspective. If I'm Anthony Martial, I would try and go this summer. For the reasons you kind of mentioned.
Yeah, but if you're any Man United player, you try and go, to be fair. So that's
the reason why I'm saying that is actually, because I'm looking at what you said. I'm looking at what you said. This is season 5 now.
Mm-hmm.
He's not been developed properly at all.
Mm-hmm.
Different managers that have all had different plans for him, if any plan for him. One of them tried to get rid of him, moved him around the pitch, took his squad number, if you remember that. So he's not being backed at the club. He probably should try and take that decision himself to leave, as opposed to the club trying to get rid of him. From the club's perspective, I think he's a fantastic talent. I can't see past the club just being an absolute shambles, though.
Hang on. But from the club, he's a great talent, but at what point do you... And it's a little bit like Ozil at my club. Fantastic talent, but if the player's not producing, for whatever reason...
I wouldn't say Martial's not producing. I wouldn't say he's not producing, because every time he's been kind of backed, he has produced. There was the time before we signed Alexis Sanchez. That season, he was our top scorer from the left. Probably our player of the season so far. We signed Alexis Sanchez. He was having a... In that season, the first half of the season, he was playing poorly for you lot anyway, because he tried to leave in the summer, I think, tried to go City.
I think so, yeah.
And then he came back, was playing poorly for you lot. We signed him, and then we know what happened then. But he was still being played. And Martial didn't really get much minutes after that. Only Carling Cup, and then just throwaway minutes. And then that kind of ruined his kind of trajectory or his development. That's one example. Even this season, where he's getting criticism, he's 1-2 in terms of goals. In a dysfunctional team like United, he's 1-2. And then you see the difference in players like Rashford and their performance when he's not in the team. There's absolutely no chance of anything happening attacking-wise when he's not around. When he is there, at least you can see there's someone trying to do something. He just doesn't have the quality around him. Yesterday, I saw times when he would try and do something and then someone would just, they would just not see it. They would not see his run or they would misplace the pass. And he's just like, oh. And then he's given a kind of rep that he's got a bad attitude or whatever because his body language, he seems like a kind of guy that just has a monotone face anyway, or just, you know, one of those anyway, whatever. That's just the way he is. But if I was in that team, I would be having fights in the dressing room through frustration, because he's not, you know, when you're in a you're a certain level and then you come and play with this level, you're wasting your time almost. He's got Andres Pereira as his, you know, Jesse Lingard, Matt James, or whoever.
You called him every name but Daniel. You know his name is Daniel James.
Why Scott. Scott, I forgot. I don't need to know his name. He's not a footballer. Anyway, but the point I'm making is that I think he does produce, but I think he produces to the level that he can produce because of what's around him, because the tools that he has, because the situation he's in.
All right.
Yesterday, what was United's tactic? What was our game plan? What was our game plan? What did we go there to do?
So let me ask you, G. Do you, as a non-United fan, get a sense that he does get blanketed in a defence by United fans? It's always the manager's fault. It's always there's no plan. Does he, after 5 years, have to take some responsibility as to why he hasn't fulfilled his potential at United?
No, I'm actually with Akin. I think I'm more on the other side. Whereas, say with Pogba, for instance, it really polarises. You've got people on either side. Mm. I'm probably on the side more that Pogba was a really established player and probably could have done more, even though there is a bit of a mess at United as well. But with Martial, I think he's come in young. I think the managers have changed several times. I think there's been times when he's been taken at the scene where he doesn't deserve to. That season you talked about, he was actually brilliant. It was under Jose. Didn't deserve to be taken out of the team. I actually do feel really sorry for him. And I think as well with, he's for some reason, I don't know, maybe because he might be on Instagram with Pogba or something like that, he's almost kind of gotten this troublemaker. So Pogba is like the chief troublemaker in everyone's eyes. And he's almost associated with that. And I haven't actually seen anything to suggest that he is a troublemaker. He just seems he does seem a bit nonchalant sometimes in his face, but generally he seems like someone who comes on, who tries to play football. But generally and when you see people like Roy King go at him, he goes at him because in his mind, he believes he's a troublemaker. Mm. And that's why he goes for Pogba. That's why he goes for Martial. And why they have this perception, I guess we could debate that all day. But ultimately, no. I don't think he is totally responsible. I think there's more responsibility in the club for failure to develop him, as they failed to develop pretty much everyone who's come through the door in recent times. And if I was United, I would be doing my best to hold on to him. Because what do? You get rid of him and you keep Pereira? Doesn't make any sense, does it?
Jeez. YouTuber.
So Pereira, so you asked what was United's plan yesterday. They were trying to copy what they did at Old Trafford, where it's 5-3-2, where Pereira plays in the 10. The two forwards go really, really wide, yeah, pin the fullbacks back, make Alexander-Arnold and Robertson worry about what's behind them. Liverpool just went man for man all over the pitch and just went, we're better at football than you, watch this. And that's what happens there. So they basically say that Gomez will deal with Martial, Van Dijk will deal with James so he can do what he likes. The fullbacks are therefore pushed right up in the wide areas. You've got to now worry about this. Matic was really concerned about Oxlade-Chamberlain all the way through the match, and Liverpool just went and pinned all the United players one at a time and went, right, we're going to show that we're better than you. Pereira is the problem in a really basic way here, in that he's rubbish. And, and
it's the perfect word.
And the problem is that he works.
No, I've got to stop you.
He didn't warn us.
You know what?
He said in a basic way.
I thought I got ready for some analysis.
Yes, you're going to get some analysis. You're going to get some analysis.
Really poor.
Pereira gets picked because he's almost like Roberto Firmino, but with none of the ability.
What's the skin complexion?
So he finds himself in this situation where he works around Liverpool's deep lying midfield, just as Roberto Firmino does. But what do they do when they actually get the ball back United? No one wants to pass to him. No one wants to bring him in the game. No one wants to say you're the creative fulcrum, you play number 10, or you're a false nine who drops, which is what Liverpool do with Firmino. So they're glad to have the work rate and have him all move around and buzz around the place and crack. But he's basically just running around.
I'm sorry, Neil, I didn't hear any of that. Because you just said they think he's Firmino with none of the ability.
None of the ability. But they want the work rate. They want their idea off. So Stieperman. He's Marco Stieperman. Stieperman just grafts in the number 10 position, so you don't get him in its piece, and he might win the ball back quick, and then he might pass it to Ben Buendia, who's well better than him. And that's what United want. United want Pereira to win it back and give it to one of the lads who's a bit better than him pretty quickly. They don't want him to actually put a through ball through. The plan is not a threaded through ball.
You know what the worst thing about that line is, that
he's right.
Well, there's that, but there's also the fact that some people don't even rate Firmino.
Yeah, but those,
you know, I mean,
those,
it's not like you're coming here.
Those people are absolutely ridiculous.
I agree.
But that's what he's doing here. And I'm watching that. And I understand why he's picking him, because he's saying, right, someone's got to make Jordan Henderson's life as hard as possible. Someone's got to graft for us in this area. Matter's not mobile enough. But rather than either get someone in over a period of time, because he's had transfer windows, rather than coach a player to do this job who's got the footballing ability and will stick it in the back of the net, for instance, sliding in at the back post at 1-0 to Liverpool, rather than do any of that, instead, you end up just saying, let's just get the grafter in, and then what we'll do is we'll give Matt the last 20 and we'll hope. And you say, what's United's plan? United's plan is just for it to be only 1-0 with 20 to go and hope we get something. That's the plan. And that's why Keane should be. For me, I understand fighting for your mate, and I understand fighting for a long term plan at Manchester United. I don't understand why you'd put all your chips and all your credibility on the fella whose plan to come to Anfield is, let's hope with a bit of luck we're still in it with 20 to go. And that's all it is. It is just, let's just hope we are just somehow just in it with 20 to go, because that's all we can broadly speaking do.
It's like Jose's still in charge.
But I think it's worse than that, because I think Jose would have a little bit of a better idea. Now, I think that Tottenham do a little bit of that as well. Let's just make sure we're still alive. But he's only been there 5 minutes. But I'm looking at this, and that's the plan. That's all it is. Let's hope we're just still alive.
So just
with 10 to go.
Just going to Pereira, you were at the game yesterday.
Yeah.
You say that he's rubbish.
Yeah.
Watching him, because we on TV, I know why I don't rate him. What is it? Why is he rubbish? What is he really bad at?
Firstly, let's say what he's good at. What you can see in the ground is, I think he's doing what he's being asked to do tactically. I think he works really, really hard. He's very, very committed. He can nick the ball back for you quite well. So that's what he's good at. When I say what he's not good at, it's that no one wants him involved in the game. He's not being picked to impact the game in a progressive way when Manchester United have got the ball. He's solely being picked to rat about and make Liverpool's lives harder, block passing lanes and all that sort of stuff. That's fine in a sense if you're a bottom 10 club, and that's fine in a sense if you've not got talented players knocking around who aren't getting opportunities.
Or you've got 7 or 8 other really good players. He's
playing holding midfield. But he's literally not playing number 10 for Man United. He's not in there. He's in there playing number 10. And as I say, Stieperman does it at Norwich, and that's genuinely a fair comparison. It's a genuinely fair comparison. And it's become, and I think it's partially because of Firmino, everyone says, if you've got someone like that who grafts in those areas, makes people's lives really difficult, one, they can't get playing, two, it's the old Klopp quote that the gegenpress is the best playmaker. But Klopp gets Marco Reus gegenpressing and then wins the ball back, and then Marco Reus has got the ball attacking your final third and you haven't got enough defenders back, well, guess what? You're in trouble. Pereira is involved in your final third. You know, Liverpool were almost at times not even bothering picking him up.
Oh, wow.
Because they're not, because they're not passing to him. They don't want to bring him into the game. And their idea is, right, just hit the flanks, hit the channels, get Martial or James running, turn them around and hope we get something. That was that's genuinely the plan. So we miss out on number 10. Let's not pass to our number 10. Fred, I think, plays well yesterday, by the way. And I think Fred has a good game. And I think whenever I've seen him this season, I think he's been quite tidy. Fred was playing the ball beyond the fella whose job it is to stand between these two fellas, pick it up, and then bring people into play. And Fred was thinking, I've got to do his job as well because I can't be passing to him. Well, I'll do my job and I'll try and do some of his job because this is killing me. And you can see it's in the sub. He does matter for him. It's in the sub. Basically, but Liverpool might be tired enough now, so I'll bring one matter on.
You know what, Neil? You won't watch United as much, but even the timings that he brings on substitutions, it's back to Van Gaal. It's all certain times.
Yeah.
Maybe the 70th or 75th minute, no matter what's happening in the game, he waits to the same kind of times to bring on the subs. And also, he talks a good game about youth players. He's such a liar. You're talking about a number 10 or bringing someone in, developing them and so on. We have Angel Gomez, young player. He will probably leave in the summer now. He's out of contract.
Mm. Doesn't want to sign, does he?
He doesn't want to sign because he's, again...
What's the point?
Mm. He's not being developed. He's not being given any chances. You're playing Lingard there and blindly backing him. He's not producing anything. And then the time you drop him is when he wants to change to an agent the club doesn't agree with. Mm. Did you see the priorities of our club? Yeah. Now bring in Pereira to play ahead of him. Mata comes in, who... All three of them I don't want at the club anymore anyway. But Mata comes in and plays pretty well in the last couple of games. I think he scored the other night or something. But then you drop him because you need someone that, as Neil just said, runs around.
Busy.
Rats around. I think that's a better term. He rats around with a nice fancy haircut.
Yeah,
and then rather than take him, identify it's not working sooner, you wait for specific times before you start making changes.
And I think that's because he doesn't want to bring Mata on because he knows Mata's not fit enough, and he knows the only way United, because of the way he set them up in the first place, rather than think, how do I get Mata onto the into this game from the outset and therefore have someone who can offer me a little bit of something, instead it becomes, we've just got to make sure we can compete physically so we can hang in there and we can still have a chance with 15 to go. And all this sounds really harsh on Pereira, who may well be a top flight.
It's not harsh.
May well be a top flight player, but what my point about this is that he's just not a number 10 to play that sort of position for a team like Manchester United.
What is he?
So exactly, he's just a footballer. He's a tidiest footballer who's technically good, who work hard and follow a manager's instructions.
You know what?
So
I
he's someone
he
who could
is.
Be playing for Southampton.
I think he's. I said it in our WhatsApp group. I think he's a YouTuber. I think he's the kind of guy that can do fancy kick-ups, that does them on YouTube, trick shots and all those stupid crossbar challenges, and opens boxes of new football boots
but can't play
with
football.
A nice haircut. I should not be a professional footballer.
Neil just mentioned Firmino there, and another topic that has been we've all discussed in the last couple of weeks is about Firmino. Mm-hmm. Firmino, because I'm calling him Firmino, is the fact that he's not prolific, but this was triggered by Gary Neville saying a week or two ago that he thinks that he's the striker that every manager in world football would want leading their front line.
Mm-hmm.
And I retract on the world class thing. I don't think Firmino is necessarily world class,
mm-hmm.
but I definitely agree that I think he is a lot better than a lot of what people think he is.
Yeah,
he doesn't score the 30 goals a season, which seems to be the reason why a lot of
people. He doesn't score the 20 goals.
Okay, the 20 goals a season that a lot of people want from their striker.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on Firmino, and do you agree that he, despite not scoring 20 goals, offers more than the 20 goals that other strikers may get?
Well, he's the best at what he does in the world, and I think Neil's kind of gone through what he does, so we don't need to go through it again. Yeah. But it's quite a niche role. It's quite a new role, which maybe a lot of other teams haven't adapted. But I think we'll see it more, and I think he will only get credit for how good he was at doing it when you see five or six teams playing with a similar type of striker. I'm a bit old fashioned. I do like a focal point. So in that sense, I'd lean towards an Aguero over a Firmino, but that doesn't mean I can't appreciate what Firmino does.
Do you think he has the capabilities in any team to score 30 league goals a season?
No, I don't think he has. But then 30 is quite a high benchmark.
30 is huge,
right?
Yeah. That's one in one.
Yeah.
Sorry, 30 goals overall.
30 goals, if he had a great season, he probably could.
He got 25 a couple of seasons ago.
for Liverpool?
Yeah, got 25 in 16-17 or 17-18. The years all blend into one. 17-18, he got playing next to Salah, got 44, and Firmino got 25. He outscored Mane that season.
Do you think he gets Aguero's numbers if he was in Man City's team?
No, but I don't think he's... He's never going to be that sort of player. Yeah. I think he's misfired in front of goal a bit this season, and I think it's got into his head. For instance, if he had scored yesterday, if that goal had been counted, because he does score, it would have been his first goal at Anfield this season. But then he scored some absolutely enormous goals. We beat Leicester 4-0, but he gets two and he gets the opener. He scored big goals. He scored the goal in the World Club Cup final. That one was his. There's a list of fair-sized Roberto Firmino goals this season, and so I think that's got to be taken into account. But there's something else though. When you look at and do everything that I have to do and look at the average position of where Liverpool picked the ball up, Liverpool's focal point is Salah. He just plays off the right. He plays the furthest forward almost every game. When you look at where they've got on the ball, where they've received the ball and passed the ball from, Salah has been further forward than Firmino. At times it almost looks like while Fabinho's been out in centre mid, it's almost looked like Liverpool play a back four with the full-backs right up, then in line with the full-backs are Wijnaldum and Henderson, then in line with each other have been Oxlade-Chamberlain or Keita and Firmino, and then Mane and Salah have actually played further forward again, almost like a front two that are split across the pitch. So I think the idea that a lot of the time, and I don't think it always necessarily suits him, and I think it's part of why Liverpool have actually brought Minamino in, Liverpool are actually playing almost like a midfield diamond, which Firmino's at the front of. And then there's the front two in front of him. He's that much deeper at times, and I think you've got to give him credit for that. But I think ultimately he does want to be a number nine, albeit one who, who runs differently and does different bits and pieces.
A few more things. We just go back to David De Gea. We've seen a slight decline in the last couple of years with David De Gea. David De Gea or Kepa?
Oh, Jordan. Man.
Really?
Next question, George.
not playing in England, the answer is David De Gea. David De Gea's head's gone. He can't share a league with Alisson and Edison. He can't handle the fact that he's not the best goalkeeper in the league, and I think his head's gone. There was times yesterday when he nearly comes off his line, not for the last one, but a couple of other times where he nearly comes off his line when Liverpool are running through, and he should just come off his line and clear everything, but he's second-guessing himself all the time. And I think his problem, genuinely, I think you can match his decline to the arrival of the two Brazilian goalkeepers, both of whom are better than him, and he's lost this idea that he's the best keeper in the league. So I think if you were buying him for a league abroad, and yes, we need to pick between those two, I'd definitely pick De Gea, but he cannot handle at the minute that he is not the goalkeeper that these other people are, and I think it's a weakness. It's a mental weakness.
I've identified it for you. I think of him. I've not rated him for years. He's weak.
But he's better than Kepa. Come on.
Yeah, come on.
I just want to throw that one in there.
I wouldn't even disagree with that theory. I think there's more to it. I think he's just. I think he's a mercenary. I think he's unprofessional. And he's just weak mentally. So I wouldn't put that past him. And that adds to the kitty cat part of it. And then he's just no commander.
All right. Couple more things. Neil, when you lift the Premier League title this season, and it will be Jordan Henderson, where does Jordan Henderson rank in Liverpool great captains?
And this is a great question, because I actually think he could, in terms of pure captaincy, in terms of someone who's developed, grown, led a football team, I think he could be one of Liverpool's great captains. I think he could be better than Gerrard. Don't think he's a better footballer than Gerrard. I think he's a long way away from being a better footballer than Gerrard. Gerrard led by example, and that's the way in which he went about his captaincy business. But, Gerrard was Liverpool captain for a long time. Henderson's had to overcome a lot, and you look at the mentality that all of that side's got, that he's been involved in and he's worked with. Would I rather have peak Steven Gerrard playing centre mid for this Liverpool team right now than Jordan Henderson? Absolutely. But in terms of being part of creating this unbelievably sort of robust framework for this fact of that, even little things that you hear when there was the bust up in England, and Southgate's go-to guy is Henderson to smooth it over and consult with. You see the way in which he is with Klopp, you see the way in which he is immediately after the matches with Klopp. Henderson's presence and his intelligence and his integrity and his work rate is a massive part of why this football team's good. And the other thing I would say is that in all seriousness, I think the best footballer in England across the last 8 weeks since Fabinho got injured has been Jordan Henderson. I think he's been the best player in the country. I don't think he's been the best player in his position in the country. I think he has been the best player in the country for 8 weeks, Jordan Henderson. He's absolutely come alive when he needed to, when we had the injury. He's been tremendous. Watching him every week has been genuinely a privilege. He was unplayable at Leicester. He was terrific yesterday. I thought Wijnaldum was terrific as well.
All you've just said then, I mean, we've argued for year, 3 years ago, I did say that I thought that outside of Vincent Kompany, he was the best captain in the league, and I got battered for it. And people still conflate best player and best captain. Mm-hmm. I think he's a brilliant captain. I only asked that question because I heard some Liverpool fans debating with, you know, Gerrard or Henderson.
People used to debate if Gerrard should have the captaincy around 07. Yeah. Liverpool supporters used to argue as to whether or not Gerrard should have the captaincy around 07, whether or not Mascherano or Alonso would be a more useful captain figure than Gerrard, and let Gerrard go and play, and let Gerrard go and express himself and take that weight off him. By 13, 14, Gerrard's an incredible captain when he's got older and he's got more settled in himself and the team's a little bit different, and he very much, like the 13, 14 team, Gerrard had under his wing all the way through until what we'll refer to in this context as the incident. But
the Demba Ba goal.
He absolutely. You know, he was brilliant then. He was absolutely brilliant. But was he a brilliant captain in 07? He was a brilliant captain in 05 because he's forcing the team to win in Istanbul. But 07, when it's all a bit mucky and you're coming fourth and you're scrapping for everything, I just think at times he just couldn't quite understand why he was playing with such poor players.
He was a bit selfish, wasn't he?
Whereas Henderson gives so much of himself. He gives so much of himself to that whole team.
I said last week on the pod, two listeners texted me or messaged me, they picked up on the fact that when we were talking about who our player of the year would be, I did. I think we both said Trent for both, didn't we? But I also said I would give an honourable shout out to Jordan Henderson. And the two Texan tweeters were like, yo, Robin. I'm like, well, obviously, in terms of you look at as a player, what he contributes, there are other better players this season than Jordan Henderson. But I think we have to overcome in taking the armband from the City legend who everyone loves, winning a Premier League, Gerrard couldn't do that. Winning a Champions League, Gerrard did do that. Do you know what I mean? I think he deserves a lot of credit.
The one thing I would say is that
Gerrard did win a Champions League.
Henderson.
The one thing I would say is that Gerrard off the pitch and the talk of Gerrard around dressing rooms and all of this, the number of footballers who've been shared dressing rooms with Steven Gerrard who speak of him so, so, so highly as a person on top of everything else. You know, and I think it's important to say that. It's important I should say that if I'm rating Henderson against him, and we don't get to see this. And so, you know, little things like the picture that Alonso put up when Gerrard retired showed the esteem that he's held in, and not just what he does on the pitch, for his generosity and kindness off it. But I do think that if you are looking at someone who's managed to really get in a certain mentality, get in a certain group collective effort, you know, get in a Lovren was doing it at the end of the final, pointing at Henderson, shouting at our end, going, he is your captain, he is your captain, over and over again. Like, the players themselves feel it. Van Dijk absolutely adores him. You know, they all are so behind him and so behind what he is, and he does all the extra work, he does all the media, extra media stuff. Everyone speaks so highly of him around the Liverpool setup, privately as well as publicly, and I've met him twice and he's sound.
Okay, let's finish on a couple of things regarding money, Akin. I saw some stats that came out in the papers this weekend that showed the financial gap closing between Liverpool and United in terms of revenue. So the argument has always been kind of posed in this post-Fergie era about United is at least the money's still coming in. At least commercially, they're still the juggernaut that they kind of always was.
But who's made that argument? Not the fans.
No, the fans. Not the fans, okay. But pundits, ex-players.
Well, a couple of the fans too.
Maybe some of the fans. None that I've heard, but I've heard it more from professionals and ex-players. You know, at least United commercially is
whenever United waste money in the transfer market, their argument is, well, we can afford it and you can't. So that's why. So I do hear that from the fans.
G's heard it. There you go.
Forget what you said.
I think I heard that from you.
Is it a concern as a United fan that even that race now, you seem to be getting reeled in as well?
I think...
You're not even commercially winning.
I think it's brilliant news, because anything that encourages the current ownership to leave is a good thing. Whilst the Glazers are owning that club, I see no end to what's happening. Woodward is clearly incapable of being a CEO, whatever the name of his role is, at a football club. I think what he's done commercially is vastly overrated, because I think it's relative own goals with United to do certain things that he's done. Just put United's badge and name on all these different brands and so on and so forth. I don't think he's done anything innovative at all. Open goals. So I don't give him...
Maybe some own goals as well, to be fair. No.
Commercially, I don't give him any ratings anyway, because I think even you could have done, you know, brought in the revenues that he has commercially.
So rude.
But in terms of the financial gap closing, I think that's brilliant news, because the Glazers are just using the club as an ATM, as they would call it, and they've kept their boy in, who has ensured, according to them, that the money keeps coming. once the next generation of youngsters come up and they're supporting City and Liverpool or whoever else, and you start seeing our commercial power shrink, other clubs overtake us in terms of sponsorship deals. Because usually when United do a sponsorship, main kit sponsorship, we break a record. That's set, used as the benchmark for everybody else to try and reach and all that. But once that starts changing and all this starts happening, that's when the Glazers are thinking, all right, I'm hoping, but that's when hopefully they start thinking maybe it's time to sell.
Or get a new CEO. Or,
the thing is, though, I think whilst they're there, the revenue will always trump or be priority over on-field, over winning.
No, they'll just get someone who's better at money. And
that's my point. But the winning will never be, won't be priority.
No, the winning won't, no.
And winning, the one thing that these owners seem to misunderstand is that in football, it's not the same as business. If you're winning on the pitch,
you're winning off it.
You're winning off financially. Off it. Yeah. A lot easier, yeah. So sometimes it's good to financially speculate, obviously in a smart way, not just blow money in stupid ways, you know. But they don't look at it that way. They try and save like 5 million here and there on transfers when if you brought the player in 3 weeks earlier, you'd have got more points that would have made more than 5 million in the long term.
Tottenham type of move.
You know, even in just places in the league, those, you know, 5 or 6 points that the player might have made a difference towards could change. So in terms of the financial gap, really and truly,
you could be blessing in disguise, you think?
I don't, not even in disguise, because as much as people say, oh, United, we're the richest club, I don't see any of that money.
So you're not,
I'm paying money. So at the least they can do for me is bring me the best players, right? Like, I've paid my part.
Not Pereira.
I think on that, the only thing that would worry me is the idea that they would worry about if the, as long as the, you know, is there a thing here where as long as the money's still going up a certain percent, it doesn't matter if we get overtaken by 3, 4, 5 teams because the money's still going up. We've still got more
we're
money to take out of this.
Money, yeah.
We're the ones who are still making more money, and it's still, you know, our
you're doing that on purpose.
Our revenues are going up 6% year on year, boys. It's another crazy win.
He's just he's getting me.
But I think there's a point though. There's a point for United where I think that with the television revenue around Champions League, that another failure to qualify for the Champions League, you just get to the point where the amount that revenue actually is, that's where suddenly someone does have to come in and say, hang on, this is literally the financial value of winning, and not even winning to the point of top four, but at least winning, because part of the thing with top four is where you sort of at times do need to at least be aiming for first or second if you're going to manage to get third or fourth. And I think that that's where I wonder if that conversation changes, because, you know, that money's going up year on year now. This is the first year it's gone up markedly again, and teams are going to see the benefits of it. And I think that might be the point where the Glazers either have to say, right, we need to strategize winning a bit, or we need to move, we need to go.
Liverpool's new Nike deal is the third most lucrative deal in the world. United took in, currently third on the rankings of earnings of last year. Third, they took in £711 million. Liverpool are currently seventh from last year's with million euros, that is. And Liverpool, the gap between United and Liverpool was Liverpool 10th, United was second. So just to kind of re-emphasise the point that the gap between the two is closing. We'll do United a bit more forensically over the coming weeks. I think, unlike Liverpool's story is done now. They've won the league. You know, we'll see you next season, Neil. Whereas United, I think there's more legs in that. So we'll come back to that as well. Very briefly, Fantasy Football League updates. Singing for Ingram is currently top of the league with a game week of 48 points. Coach Gerald has come from nowhere to move into second with a game week of 56 points. You heard G going, because you're 32nd with 24 points as well.
How many people are in this league, G?
That's 1,000.
There's 34 or you're 32nd or something.
That's not that bad, come on.
I think there's 40 in this league. And
there's more than 40, come on, John.
I think it's 40.
You're in the bottom 25% here.
Oh, man, I'm doing
so
terrible.
Am I in the league?
No, I don't know why you're not in our league, Akin. I'm a bit offended. I had a game week of 52 points. I'm 13th. So I'm like,
I had more points than both of you.
I'm like the Arsenal of our league. What?
I had more points than both of you.
No, you didn't.
I had more game week points than you.
You sure?
Yeah.
What did you get?
57.
Okay. Well, makes a change.
24 is shocking, though.
Yeah, I tried to add that. And
that's the norm for
you. Yeah, no, whoa, 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 whoa.
Most weeks you're in the 20s.
Do all your players ring in sick?
It's the Pereira of the...
Oh jeez!
Wow.
I had De Bruyne as captain, man.
So did I.
The World Cup,
and I had Vardy up front as well.
Yeah,
Aguero was my captain.
That's how you fluked it.
That's, anyway, that's the reason.
Fluke it, did he? I mean, he picked somebody else who did better. He fluke it. Oh, Sergio Aguero, that's it. A wild left field choice.
You fluked it. Let's wrap up, guys, with a very brief chat I want to have around sackings and the right time to sack and the wrong time to sack. And let's widen this out into the whole league. I'll start with you, Akin. With your club, United, a lot of the fan base want him out. But looking down the leagues, there's been some clubs that could possibly go down, yet still keep their manager. So I think Norwich are gone. And they'll more than likely stick with Farker. Bournemouth, I think, an interesting example of Eddie Howe, who are looking like they may go down as well. And yet the fan base love Eddie Howe. He's a bit of a legend down there. When for you is the right time, despite a poor run, to stay firm and think, actually, no, we're not going to sack our guy, despite we've lost 7 games out of 9. And when is the time to pull the trigger?
So I look at managerial tenures a bit differently. I remember, I think in the summer when Brighton sacked Houghton, people were saying, oh, how terrible, he's done a great job. I saw it as maybe they were onto their next phase. Mm-hmm. And this is part of their plan. Houghton, manager A, let's say, plays this style of football and he'll get us through League One to the Championship. Manager B comes in now, or we get manager B in when we're at this phase, we want to start progressing to this type of football to get us to the Premier League, manager C, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. I think more clubs should start following plans in that respect when it comes to their managers, let alone recruitment. I think they do with recruitment, you hope, some do, but with managers, and stop being so reactionary. These runs are always going to happen. But if it's not a part of the plan, I mean, how can you sack one manager and then get in a manager that is completely the opposite? Does that mean you've kind of curtailed all your plans from top to bottom throughout the club in favour of what this guy's bringing in? So I just think all of that is very reactionary, just based on a run of games.
Well, Brighton are a good example you mentioned, because they've actually got less points now than they did under Houghton at this stage last season. But the accusation against Houghton from the fans was
the style of football.
It was awful football,
yeah,
to
negative.
Watch. So how much do you factor that in as well?
It does depend on the plan. It depends what you prioritise as a club. A club like Manchester United, we should never be putting up with the level of manager we have now, especially for this amount of time. So there's no give him extra time.
He's just not good enough for the job.
He's just not good enough. And in some circumstances, if you give somebody...
Okay, sorry, here's a question. With a competent board, can Solskjaer win a Premier League?
Never. He's not... No.
Even with a competent board?
With a competent board, with the best players in the world.
You don't think he's got it in him? He's just not good enough.
With God playing on the pitch, Solskjaer is not...
He's just not the guy.
He's not good enough.
Okay.
So when it comes to when is the right time, I think when the plan calls for it, all this reaction, sacking a manager mid-season, so it should be like the last thing in the world. Or it should be like, in my opinion, it should be, yeah, one of the last things in the world. But then I understand why clubs do it, because Premier League survival, being in there, the amount of money that it takes or that it brings in, it causes people to panic, causes people to be reactionary, and it means so much to that club. But a lot of the bigger clubs, I think they should kind of see things out, so to speak, if this is what the plan is with this guy.
It's the plan.
Let's see what's going on.
All right.
If he's not good enough and you do sack him, the appointment needs to be looked at. And the people in charge of appointing him didn't do their due diligence well enough.
And hold them accountable.
And they need to be held accountable as well.
Would you impose a rule that says you can't sack mid-season?
No, I don't. Honestly, I don't even really like the transfer window, to be fair. So I definitely wouldn't want it with managers. I'm sure the managers' union would like that. The LMA would probably go for that. I guess it could.
Because that then makes owners and boards and chairmen have to really think about who they're appointing. Because this is the guy you've got to have for a year. There's no, if it goes badly wrong, you can sack him. You've got to make people really think about who they're appointing then.
You say that, but then, like, why do we have to, why does that have to be the case? Why can't people be flexible? Why can't people change? Why can't the Watford model work? Why can't it be I know, you know, you're used to the Wenger for 20 years and stuff like that, but I actually don't mind a mid-season manager second. I like the
well,
bounce.
Yeah, you ain't got a choice because you're Chelsea.
Yeah, right? Well, we won the Champions League off it, so it's not bad, is it?
Fair point.
So no, I don't. I wouldn't go with that. If you was to do with that, then it shouldn't be for a year. Maybe you'd have that the January window, and then you see like five guys like losing their job.
Not sleeping on New Year's Eve, are you?
Three of them were just top
clubs
anyway.
Yeah. Neil, this was triggered in me because I heard some talk this last week about Hasenhüttl, and everyone's saying, oh, you see, Southampton stuck with their manager. You know, we should see more clubs stick with it. This is what can happen. I'm like, that could be an anomaly. I've always rated Hasenhüttl, even when they were getting battered 9-0 going for a poor run. I think he's a really good manager. I think a better club, I think he could do some really good work. But it just annoyed me that this idea that because Southampton stuck with their guy and it's now proving dividends, that should be the rule for everybody else.
I think the league's really interesting for this at the minute. I think Hasenhüttl's a really good thing to cite in both directions in that it's worked. But imagine if it hadn't, because if they hadn't, they'd be in real, real trouble right now. And also, you've got the two, you know, the two best sides in the bottom half at the moment are Southampton and Watford, and they've done it profoundly differently. So if you're going to praise Hasenhüttl and the Southampton board around that, then you've got to turn around and say, well, haven't Watford's board got it right in the end with Pearson? So you can go both ways on that. For me, what's really interesting, Burnley beat Leicester yesterday. They were fortunate to do so, but they all scrapped and they all still believe in Sean Dyche, and I think that Bournemouth lodge made it clear they still believe in Eddie Howe. What I think is really difficult is the idea of bringing anyone else into Burnley, certainly mid-season, to replace Sean Dyche, because they play his way.
It's so
nailed on. I think Bournemouth's a bit different. I think Eddie Howe's so important to that club that they don't want to lose him. And even if they went down, they think the best person to bring us back is Eddie Howe. But I think right now, looking at Bournemouth, those players couldn't have to be listening to someone else for 4 months. Like, can he give Eddie Howe a sabbatical? Can he go and tour the world? Have a little look at Vietnam? All of that sort of stuff, and come back refreshed in May and June. Yeah. Because post-match, I genuinely wanted to lean into the telly and give him a hug. I carry no particular candle for Eddie Howe, but when he gave the interview after the game getting beat 1-0 at Watford, I really felt like he's looking at them, he doesn't know what else to do. I always remember when Mourinho was at Chelsea and he gave that interview where he answered one question for 7 minutes.
Crystal Palace.
And everyone said afterwards, that typical Mourinho mind games. And I was like, no, that's a man having a breakdown on television. Yeah. That's a mind game.
Straight meltdown.
That's a man having a meltdown. Everyone with mind games, he's made it all about himself. He's just answered one question
for
7 minutes.
People say, it wasn't even a question.
Yeah,
it wasn't. It wasn't.
And that's what Eddie Howe looked to me like. I've just looked at them in the dressing room, and I don't know what to do with them. And I've been looking at them on and off, different ones of them for 5 years, 6 years. And what am I meant to say? That's almost what he wanted to say. What am I meant to do here? Because you know, what am I meant to do? That lad's just handballed it, and I don't even know why. And you can sort of go along all this, and I do feel like sometimes. So that's that example. And then there's some managers in the league who should just not be in charge of the clubs they're in charge of. I think Manchester United's a very good example of it. Genuinely do believe that he should. Yeah, I think it's almost an affront to human dignity at this point that he remains manager of Manchester United. And I think that, you know, everything should be better than this. Emery, it got to that sort of stage at Arsenal where, and my worry about saying if they can't move all season, sometimes some dressing rooms and some places just become so toxic that you can't change all the players. So you've got to change the manager and just have something fresh. And as I say, I think Bournemouth need Eddie Howe. But it might be that they just don't need Eddie Howe taking training tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that
a break.
That can happen. You know, but I don't know. So I don't know what the solution to that is.
And just finish on your mate, G. We call him Pulis, Jose, at Spurs. Spurs are a good example in the sense that, kind of alluding to what Akin was saying earlier on, they've decided to kind of go completely the opposite way of what they were doing. They'd obviously built something with Pochettino, a style of play, a style of coaching, a style of how they wanted to achieve success. They didn't achieve success in the form of a trophy, and they decided, you know what, sod this, we need to go for the guy that does the opposite of Pochettino but will increase our chances of winning a trophy. Are they an interesting example in terms of how even mid-season you can just decide to kind of just totally change the kind of manager you want in your club to achieve what you determine success?
Yeah, I think Jose probably looked at the Tottenham squad, and in fact probably maybe even the public might have looked at the Tottenham squad and thought,
it's a good match.
That is a squad that Jose can get things out of, even though they're playing slightly different, but it just hasn't really worked out.
Is that because they've been poached? They've been so under the Poch way of playing that it's going to take unpoaching, to awful grammar, but you know what I mean.
I just think the personnel are probably not as good as maybe what they were 12 months ago, and maybe Poch did miracles to get them to the Champions League last year.
They were also coming to the end of their generation. They needed a lot of squad investment, and You're not going to get that from Levy. Mm. Not significant like they need. You're not going to get the amount they need that Pulis lacks. That's a marriage made in hell.
I think
I lost a lot of respect for Spurs when they appointed him.
So did I.
Because when you talk about they had a plan, or at least it appeared they had a plan, they had a manager that did things a certain way, and everything kind of went towards that. He left, and they got in the anti-Christ, almost. You know, and he was the anti-everything that they were kind of trying to represent. And knowing how he behaves, he's not going to function well in that situation as well. Anyway, they have one striker that always gets injured every season for like 2-3 months, every year. Mm. So it was always going to happen. Mm. It's happened now. We're in the window. I know there's something happening behind the scenes right now, but he's still in the honeymoon phase, so he's able to keep a lid on it. But that implosion is probably going to happen much sooner than it usually comes when it comes
I think I've seen it start, because he's already gone after
a couple of players, hasn't
he? Yeah, it's always like with these passive aggressive comments. So it's not for, it's like, oh, you know,
need to
talk
to him when you're, you know, tonight.
It's always kind of this, oh, well, what can we do? You know, we haven't got the player, so we have to focus on the good things.
Well, Ollie was very defensive last week about the fact that, to be fair to him, he has just got there.
No, that's true.
So although I am seeing some signs that if I was a Spurs fan would slightly concern me, he has just got
there. But then if the reason why Akin dubbed in the Portuguese Pulis was because he's a job doer, you know, in that sense that Pulis goes in and he saves someone. Mm. Jose comes in for short-term jobs. Mm. That's supposed to be his strength. His strength has never been building up great teams. So if that's not his strength, what did you get him for?
And then when summer comes and he doesn't get that backing that he's used to, what's going to happen?
Well, I said this when he was appointed. The reason why it won't work for me is because you need two things to happen. You need Levy to change and Jose to change. And
neither one.
That's not going to happen. Do you know what I mean? So it was a weird appointment, although I get the desperation for someone that could bring in a trophy.
It was desperate on both sides. It was a marriage of convenience, a bad marriage of convenience on both sides. Mm. Levy needed someone. I think Levy didn't want to pay someone out of their contract. And Jose was available.
I think Jose is winning more out of this arrangement than Tottenham are, personally.
But in the end...
So? Yeah, because where else could he have gone? I think Tottenham is the biggest club he could have got.
When he fails, he's done. I think he could have still,
no A-list bracket club would have appointed Jose.
Because of how bad things are going at United, if he stayed out of the job, in his silence, it could have been a case of, see, I told you, it was all them.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Yeah, so his reputation kind of could have grown.
Yeah, he comes on Sky, gives some good analysis.
And he says, I told you that second place was my greatest achievement. And then you have idiots like Custis.
He committed many crimes
yesterday on that Sunday supplement. That guy, he needs to get sentenced.
Oh, man.
But then you have people that will feed into that. They will.
I think it's a very interesting time in the Premier League for managers. I think you've got Arteta at Arsenal. You've got a legend at Lampard at Chelsea.
I think the fans' reaction is interesting that he's just been given a complete free ride. He's done nothing
we'll
to deserve it.
We'll do Arsenal next week. But I think just across the league, there's so much difference happening in terms of the types of approach to managers that's happening to appointments. I think generally...
Arteta is just doing what Emery was doing.
Listen, it could be worse. We could be talking about West Ham.
We're doing that next week, actually, as well. No, we are. Wow. We're going to be getting down from West Ham Fan TV on next week. Akin, Neil, and G, cheers for coming on this week's FFP.
Thanks for having us.
Do not forget to subscribe to us. You know what to do by now. Leave us a comment, share, tell a friend, tell the postman, tell your weed dealer, tell the Uber Eats driver, anybody about the FFP. Find us on Spotify and iTunes as well. Until next week, we'll see you. Peace.